Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour, halfway home with you on a busy, rainy, gloomy Friday, talking sports with you on 92.9 The Game. The Reds have crawled back into this one after a couple of solo jobs off of Grant Holmes. It is now 4-2 in the top of the fifth inning. We'll, of course, keep you posted on that all game long. No need to go anywhere else. But we're talking Falcons right now because this interesting trade proposal by ESPN has gotten a lot of people fired up. I'll read the explanation again for ESPN for people who are just tuning in for the second half of the show and missed the first half. The offer is from ESPN's Seth Walder, and if you're on hold, just stay there. I'll get to you in 1 second. Bills get a 2027 fourth-round pick. Falcons get Keon Coleman and a 2028 sixth-round pick. And this is why the deal makes sense, according to ESPN, and I happen to agree, and we're taking your calls at 404-726-0929, seeing if you agree or disagree. The Falcons are a logical fit because of where they're at as a team, starting over at head coach and GM with long-term uncertainty at quarterback. They can afford to take a shot on Coleman's upside, and he would immediately add value to a wide receiver room that doesn't feature much after Drake London, Alameda, Zacchaeus, Jahan Dotson, and third-rounder Zachariah Branch. And if Coleman breaks out in year three, they also retain his rights for 2027. I think it's worth it. It's a huge upside swing. We had callers say, well, Turtle, listen, you don't want to just give up a first-round pick. You're not just giving it up. You're not lighting it on fire. You're being handed a potential Willy Wonka golden ticket back. Now, it's potential. I get it. But Keon Coleman was drafted essentially in the late first round. He was like the second or third pick of the second round. So this guy has first-round talent, and he had 11 touchdowns in his sole year at Florida State in 12 games. I mean, he averaged a touchdown a game, essentially. It's pretty good. And, you know, the classic need a change of scenery thing often works in the NFL. Matt Ryan and Ian and Kevin are going to have to sit this guy down in a room and say, you're going to show up to meetings on time. We're not going to have to bench you. You're going to show up and you're going to participate. And you're not going to be an insubordinate like you were in Buffalo. These are our rules and you're going to play by them. And he's either going to do it or he's not. And to me, a fourth round pick, put the potential of not getting your return on a fourth round pick versus the potential upside of this guy to pair with Drake London as your two main outside receivers, the Twin Towers combo that would make is tantalizing with Pitts and Bijan and Zach and OZ and everybody else in the offense. I think it instantly makes you much better if this guy could live up to his potential. So what do you guys think? 404-726-0929. Josh is up next. Josh.
Turtle, what's up, man?
What up, Turtle? I almost called you Turtle. What up, Turtle?
That good job. Huh?
I almost called you Turtle. What's up, Josh?
Oh, hey, first of all, I want to say I appreciate the shout-out yesterday, Oren. Appreciate it. But as far as this, the question of the night, this is one of the worst trade ideas I've ever heard in my life. Keon Coleman has done literally next to nothing in the NFL. In 2 years, he has never eclipsed 40 receptions. In 2 years, he's never eclipsed 500 yards. They drafted him there to be their number one receiver. They didn't draft him there to be a number two or number three receiver.
Well,
they drafted
him. Josh, and obviously I'll let you finish. I know you're just getting started. He does have 8 touchdowns. That's not nothing.
That's 4 touchdowns a year. That's not like he had 8 touchdowns in one
season.
No,
but I'm saying what I'm saying is that there's a sample size there that says this guy, if he gets trained up the right way, has a chance to make it. It's not like he has 1 touchdown over 2 years. Like, I don't know, Kyle Pitts did in the NFL.
Turtle, he has 2 100-yard receiving games in his entire career, one for each season that he's been in the NFL. He has 3, maybe 4, I think it's 3 or 4 total receptions in the playoffs. The dude he's been a bust, okay? He has Josh Allen as his quarterback. Now, I think Josh Allen is a little overhyped, but still, you have an MVP as your quarterback, and you can't manage more than 40 receptions in a season, and you were brought there to be the guy. You know, like I said, he's let other people surpass him, like Khalil Shakir, and even Joshua Palmer has surpassed him as far as productivity. Like, and I also think that we are undervaluing our current wide receiver room when Ian got hired, he said the main objective was to raise the floor of, you know, so basically your sorriest player is no longer on, you know, he's raised the talent level. As far as Jahan Dotson is concerned, there's a reason why the last 2 years he's been not as productive as he was his first 2 years, because he was buried behind better receivers than him in Philadelphia. So that's kind of understandable. In Coleman's case, like I said, he was brought there to be the guy, and he's just not it. So I wouldn't dare, like, if it was maybe trade a sixth rounder for him and you get back a seventh rounder or something, like, okay, cool. But a fourth round pick is too valuable to trade for a guy who's done next to nothing in the NFL.
So, Josh, you don't believe in a sense of urgency at all? Like, because my theory is you bring this guy in and you have to sit him down and say, dude, you are on the verge of being out of this league. You show us what you got or you don't make it. And you hope that message gets through.
If he was the guy, Turtle, or if he was even remotely close to a guy, you wouldn't even have to sit him down and have that conversation with him. Like, you are literally almost a first-round pick. You are playing in an organization that's been to the postseason however many years in a row. You have an MVP-level quarterback. There's literally no reason for him to not be better than he is.
Well, Hang on, Josh. Of course there is. It's ego. These guys, you know it. You're a smart football fan. A lot of these guys walk into the league thinking they're the you-know-what. And they're not. Yep. And sometimes they need to be humbled. And I think this dude is being humbled right now.
Which may or may not be true. But to another caller's point, if you watch, even if you just watch the Buffalo game that we had last year on Monday Night Football, he caught three balls. But the reason why he only caught three balls is because AJ had him locked up. If you press Keon Coleman, he checks out. We just went through, you know, this city killing Kyle Pitts for three seasons, essentially for questionable effort, whether he actually had questionable effort or not, whatever. But this city killed him for three seasons. And you want to bring a guy in who we know has questionable effort. I don't see it working.
So then how do you explain what he did at Florida State?
And how do you say what he did where?
At Florida State.
Even if you want to bring that up, 50 receptions. That's like four receptions a game in college where you are at a D1 school and sometimes you're going up against cupcakes. Even then, that tells me you ain't really applying yourself, Smokey. So, that's just neat.
Oh, Josh.
11 touchdowns is impressive.
Yeah.
You know, that's impressive. But right. The yardage itself on 50 receptions, that's not that impressive to me.
Yeah. No, and Josh, I get it. Your phone's crapping out a little bit, but always appreciate the good back and forth. Josh, one of our regulars there. You can call me tomorrow on the Saturday show. I'm on 4 to 8, and we can certainly continue this conversation. But listen, guys, I think one fourth-round pick is being talked about like it's a fait accompli that you're getting, you know, your next Grady Jarrett here. Like, that's not happening. You know, like, Brandon Dorlus is a good player. I think he was a fourth-round pick, right? He really popped last year. Is that the norm? I know another caller said, well, Turtle, the league is made up of third and fourth and fifth round picks. Okay, but the league is also made up of first and second round picks, which this guy was. I don't think you can say with any certainty yet that Keon Coleman is cooked. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt for a year to prove that what went on in Buffalo is not going to be a representation of the player that he's going to be for the rest of his career. And again, to give it a fourth, it's not like you need to spend $50 million on this guy. Like, I think a lot of us here in this conversation are really protecting a fourth-round pick as if it's like this, you know, can't-miss, coveted, once-in-a-lifetime asset. You'll get another one next year. You know, like, I don't think trading the potential of what Keon Coleman could be if he gets his head on straight and gets his act together is so worth to me the potential trade of a fourth-round pick. Like, the way that completely shapes the dynamic of your passing game to pair him with Drake London is tantalizing. It's so worth it. And if this guy understands the value of the crossroads that he's at in his NFL career, and you can get through to him, the sky's the limit. The league is filled with stories like that, filled with them. Now, to be fair, it's also filled with a bunch of busters, but it's also filled with redemption stories. And I think Keon Coleman can be just that. Sam is up next. Sam.
Yo, what's going on, Taylor? Can you hear me pretty good?
Yep, I got you. What's up?
For sure. All right, so from what I've been hearing this entire time, a lot of these people sound like they've just been straight up disagreeing with what you're saying. And I ain't gonna lie, I was honestly going to be one of them. Like, when I first heard the question, I was like, oh, no way. But then you do, like, you literally did the same thing you always do. You got me thinking. You really changed my mind. And you, like, when you start talking and you start breaking everything down of how, what height Keon Coleman stands at, the fact that all the weapons that we have here in Atlanta already, and then the addition of Zach Branch and then Olamide Zaccheaus. So regardless of all of that, I just feel like the fact that we have one of the most accurate passers, and sorry to say, I'm making it seem like Tua is just going to absolutely have the job, but at the same time, if Stefanski is saying that what he likes in quarterbacks is accuracy, then Tua's got the job. I'm sorry. So to put in that aspect, if we're going to have Keon Coleman, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Olamide Zaccheaus, Zach Branch, and Bijan Robinson, there's going to be so much room for the ball to go around. And I'm not just going to say everybody's going to get fed, but at the same time, Keon Coleman having, what you said, 8 touchdowns in what, 2 seasons?
Yep.
Yeah, and you said that no other Falcon player has had that in 2 seasons other than Drake London?
Not even close.
Exactly. So what is the point? Well, why not take the shot? I don't want Stephon Diggs. I feel like Diggs comes with a little bit of baggage. I mean, I feel like Diggs is better. Obviously, he's better. Yes, that's true. But at the same time, this guy, Keon Coleman, is young. When people play on Madden, they got Keon Coleman on Madden. Like, he's just absolutely amazing. Like, it's hard to guard this guy and everything. So, and that's just a video game. You get into the real-life aspect of who this guy is, how tall he is, how Drake London could literally be a big brother to him, and then you got the second most, accurate quarterback behind Joe Burrow in the league right now, today? Yeah, give me Keon Coleman over Stephon Diggs and pass the ball to whoever you want to, but also get it to that guy. We probably would be able to use that guy and Drake London in the red zone, having both of them stretched out wide, going up top, catching it. Like, this guy's catch radius is also amazing. Tua is so accurate, as you can see from the clips that I've been seeing on YouTube and Instagram. This guy, Tua, has just been straight up feeding Drake London and Kyle Pitts, putting the ball exactly where they want the ball to go, making it hard for the receiver, making it hard for the defender to actually touch the ball at all. So, I mean, why not give it a shot?
Yeah, and that's my whole point. And I appreciate the phone call, and thanks for the kind words. That's the whole point of this conversation, right? Why not? Guys, again, a fourth-round pick is not, it's not a lock to draft a Pro Bowler or a Hall of Famer. I think we're kind of putting a line. Maybe we're a little scared off as a fan base and a media because of what happened this year with not having a first-round pick. So we're, I'm like putting my hands over my heart here, like, clutching on to all the picks that we're going to have next year, and you don't want to risk one. But the risk-reward here to me is just a no-brainer. This guy was a borderline first-round talent, as our caller brought up before, to be the number one receiver for the Bills. And he's gotten in his own way. But if you get him here and you get him on the straight and narrow, I think the sky's the limit for this offense, as our last caller just said. Tone, hang on. We'll get to you when we get back. 404-726-0929. If you're on hold, stay there as well. We'll also get to a producer six-pack. What do you guys think? Our late-night crowd bringing it just as strong as our commute-home crowd on this topic about Keon Coleman. Should the Falcons make the move? I think they should. I think it's a no-brainer. You could really unlock something special with this offense. Our last caller put it best. If you have to constantly worry about Drake London and Keon Coleman running down the field, the middle of the field is going to be open, and you got a bunch of guys that can catch the ball on 92.9 The Game. Braves now hanging on, 4-3 in the top of the sixth. I'm trying to add as Cincinnati has crawled back into this one after the Braves were up 4. Were they up 4-0? Yeah, they were up 4-0 in this one, and now it is 4-3. And some potential good news on the way. We'll share with you here momentarily. Got to do our due diligence here and not violate any FCC or copyrights or infringe on any potential broadcast going on. But there was an update to give you in this one, so we'll give it in just a second. Right now, we're taking your calls at 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. This Keon Coleman potential trade has got a lot of people fired up. I wasn't sure how big or small. You never know when you try to come up with your topics for the night. But and I really appreciate the caller that called in and said, I make him think. That's what you're supposed to do here. Whether you agree or whether you disagree, as long as I'm informing and entertaining and engaging, that means that I'm doing my job. So thanks for that. 404-726-0929. Yes! There we go, boy. Double to right. Let's go. 404-726-0929 is the number to get involved. Yaz makes it 5-3 now in the top of the sixth. Richard is up next. Richard, what do you think?
Hey, I just turned on the car and heard your conversation about Keon Coleman. And not really an Atlanta fan, but I live here and I keep up on the Falcons. But I think that I agree with what you're saying in that a fourth round pick is not a back breaking price to pay. And it, you know, it wouldn't be the end of the world if trading for Coleman didn't work. But the input that I wanted to make was that I also would hesitate to overstate what the upside on Keon Coleman is. And there was a lot of talk about maybe like character issues or attitude concerns with Coleman. And when I think of a guy like that, I think of like George Pickens, who is a proven, like, legit NFL wide receiver, you know. And when the Cowboys traded for him, I think they gave up a third round pick. I mean, that seemed on its face like a very smart trade. But for Coleman, it kind of reminds me of Jonathan Mingo, if you remember, that the Cowboys traded a fourth round pick the year before, who was like a 33rd pick. You know, he was a very high upside athletic guy, but didn't really work out because it seemed that he just wasn't really made for the league. I don't know.
Well,
are you there?
Yeah. No, but my counter is what I've been saying all night, Richard, is that Keon Coleman has shown the ability to catch touchdowns in this league. Like, it's not like he has, again, the example of like Kyle Pitts, where after 2 years in the NFL, he had a total of 3 touchdowns. He has 8 touchdowns over his first 2 seasons in the NFL. And he has proven that he can catch the ball. It's not like this guy has, like, you know, the yips or the drop. I understand he doesn't get a ton of separation, but if you can mold him back into the player that he was at FSU, that's why I think it's worth the potential gamble of a fourth round pick.
Let me think. So with Coleman, I think that a lot of teams fall into traps when they're drafting really big, athletically skilled wide receivers that have issues like getting separation and you know, kind of being a playmaker with the ball in their hands. And players like that, I think, have a tendency to sort of flame out in the league. And when I look at like 8 touchdowns in 2 years for Coleman, I wonder how much of that is just the opportunities that he was getting within a really bad wide receiver core that really needed like a big X receiver, and having and get catching the ball from a guy like Josh Allen, who is, you know, definitely a guy that
throws the ball up for
grabs. But
Richard, just hang on 1 second. What are the facts outside of Drake London in terms of proven commodities in the NFL? The Falcons don't exactly have, you know, the Rams receiving core. They don't.
Yeah.
They got a bunch of dudes.
That's true.
And Keon Coleman.
But do you think that Drake London's skill set kind of overlaps with Coleman's in a way that
not if you put him on the opposite side of the field? Because then you have those two huge guys as your double X receivers, and then what does that do for Pitts over the middle? What does that do for Branch over the middle? What does that do for Bijan running lanes and catching the ball out of the backfield? Because then you have to dedicate your top two corners in all likelihood to guard those two guys. I would make it a Twin Towers offense. That's what I would do.
Well, I think if you look at, and maybe it's not going to be Tua that'll be the quarterback, but a quarterback like that, who he's thrived with, they're not those jump ball type of receivers, you know. I don't think that a quarterback like that really even maximizes that sort of skill set.
Have you seen the – I know you said you're not a Falcons fan, but au contraire, mon frère, the combination of Pitts and London, they had it cooking. Penix in London. They had it cooking.
I think that Penix is definitely a quarterback that would be better suited to that sort of big outside receiver model because that's kind of the way he likes to play. But if you're going with a guy like Tua, I think you really need to, like, with a guy like Zachariah Branch, seek out those sorts of play styles. You know, guys that can get the ball over the middle and, like, turn 5-yard short routes into big gains, because Tua is not going to be a guy that's going to throw the ball up for grabs, you know, or like take advantage of size mismatches on the outside.
No, but what you need to do then, if you're the defense still, is you can't leave those guys open on an island, like, you know, by themselves, because then, you know, Tua can even, you know, it's not like he has a rocket for an arm, but he can hit the guy if he's just left wide open. And to your point, if you have two of those guys lining up on the outside, again, what does that create over the middle? That's where a guy like Tua can thrive, even if London and Coleman are decoys, essentially. So I think it makes your point that if you're going to tell Tua that his best work is done over the middle, well, when you have to take two of your best defenders and run them down the field because you have Coleman and London running down the field in a straight line, then what does that do to the middle of the field?
I see your point. I watching Coleman with the Bills the last couple of years, he just feels like a zero separator sort of contested catch jump ball guy that doesn't really stretch defenses so much as it compresses offenses, and it makes things really tough to move the ball. And maybe that was because the Bills just didn't have anybody else, you know, other than Shakir to really throw to, but everything felt so condensed with that offense despite having a quarterback with a rocket for an arm, you know. But I really appreciate you taking the call and hear you out. And I wouldn't really be opposed if I was a Falcons fan to a fourth or a fifth for Keon Coleman. I would just temper expectations.
No, it's totally fair. Appreciate the phone call, Richard. Great back and forth at 404-726-0929. But that's why we do this. That's what we're here for, to hash it out, to break it down, to see what makes sense and to see what doesn't. By the way, the Braves now up 8-3. Let's go. Guess who again? Money, 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 money. Money. So I'm just saying, at the end of the day, I know the limitations of Coleman. I just think the offense has such a chance to excel when you put him with a Drake London, with a Pitts. You got all those big bodies that need to be, like, you can't just leave him open. He's going to catch the ball if you throw it to him. Like, I think a lot of us are basically saying, well, you know, he's a zero in high tops and he's a walking nothing. And if you just put him out on the field and he doesn't even have a defender covering him, you know, he's going to essentially do nothing. That's not true. This guy is not bad. He just is untapped potential. Again, in college, he caught 11 touchdowns in one season in 12 games. I mean, that's not something you just give up on. Listen, if he was a perfect citizen and it just wasn't working out, I think that's one thing. But the fact that there's this off-the-field stuff and the clashing with the coaches, I actually think that helps the argument, because that tells me that it's not just a football thing, that he needs to be fixed, which is, again, a gamble. But if he's going to come here, he's going to have to play ball. Otherwise, guys, his NFL career is O-V-E-R. It's over. So I think you're going to get a guy that's going to come here, and even if he's not humbled, he knows what he needs to do in order to eventually get the bag and establish himself in the league. These guys are not, you know, Antonio Brown did what he did at the end of his career because he's, you know, he was just a complete knucklehead. But he had already made his money. He had already established himself as a Hall of Fame receiver. Again, Stephon Diggs, if he comes here, he's a borderline Hall of Fame receiver, if not one already. he's not going to come in here and just put his feet up and play ball. He's going to be the same jerk that he's been everywhere he's been. Keon Coleman can't come in here and run like that in the locker room. He's going to get shunned. Like, these guys are not going to accept it. What he has earned the respect of absolutely nobody. And that's the point. 404-726-0929. Great calls tonight on a Friday, rainy, gloomy night here in the A. When we get back, BMAC, our guy, speaking of FSU, joined Dukes and Bell earlier. We'll let you hear what he had to say about the state of the league. Always a good conversation with BMAC. And then a busy, busy 9 o'clock hour coming your way as well. If you can't get through on the phones, hit me up at C Thomas Radio. I'll read some of your comments as well before we get out of here. It's Turtle till 10 on 92.9 The Game. Thomas tonight, Turtle, live in the Kia Studios. Great conversation tonight about this proposed trade by ESPN that has a lot of people feeling a lot of different ways about Keon Coleman. We'll take more calls before we get out of here. Again, the offer by Seth Walder of ESPN, 2027 fourth, and the Falcons get Coleman and a 2028 sixth. I think they should do it. I think it's a really high upside move, and I think Coleman is a player that has a ton of untapped potential, and it's just going to be up to Matt and Kevin and Ian to sit him down when he gets here and say, listen, man, you want to make this big money in the NFL, whether it's here in Atlanta or somewhere else? You want to not be known as one of the bigger busts of the last couple of years in the draft? Well, you got a chance to do that right here in Atlanta. And if you play ball, we play ball, and you have a chance to be a real big contributor to a wide receiver room that could certainly use a boost. All right, 404-726-0929. Quick check on the Braves for you. We are going into the top seven, and it is 8-3 on the backs of an Acuna home run in the first, and Yaz with a double, Mateo with a single, Harris with a bunch of RBIs. So the Braves offense is a rolling right now. Also right now, we got to welcome in our buddy Bryant McFadden, who joined Dukes and Bell for his weekly visit, one of the best voices going on the NFL. And this was their conversation exclusively here on 92.9
All right, let's talk to our man BMAC, Bryant McFadden, two-time Super Bowl champion. He is an analyst for CBS Sports, and he's on the Sweet James Accident Attorneys Hotline. And BMAC, OTAs has been interesting this week. Kevin Stefanski saying he really likes Tua's accuracy, that he's been a leader on and off the field in the meeting rooms. And look, it's OTAs. We know it's not camp and certainly not games. But I've been saying I think he's got the upper hand. I'm wondering if you feel that way after hearing what's coming out of OTAs.
Yeah, I think if you talk about having an advantage, I think it would be Tua Tagovailoa right now, because there is no limitations on Tua in terms of practices, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, Michael Penix hasn't been cleared to do 11-on-11 yet. So guess who gets all of those reps, especially with the ones? It's Tua Tagovailoa. Not to mention, this is a new offense for all parties involved, you know, when it comes to the quarterback competition. So, you know, usually the newest guy to a team is probably the one that's at a disadvantage, because usually it's a new regimen, a new scheme that they have to learn. But because this is a new coaching staff with Kevin Stefanski, you know, everybody is an even playing field when it comes to the above-the-shoulder game with the offense. So, you know, hearing that Tua is, you know, doing a pretty good job, I'm not surprised. He's a seasoned vet. He's been around the block for quite some time. So these are moments where most seasoned vets, you know, really showcase their experience in being able to be consistent on the practice field.
Why do you think it went so wacky in Miami? You put it on the coaching staff?
I think I put it on all parties involved. I think the coaching staff, clearly we heard about rumblings about the lack of respect, you know, being a leader from McDaniels when he was there on the sideline. You know, the defense was kind of in a disarray, and then the personnel, you know, wasn't living up to the billing, and then they had unfortunate injuries as well. And for Tua, it felt like he just, outside of that, those what pretty good years in 2023 and 2024, he never really got back to being that guy who was a very, very accurate quarterback. And sometimes, you know, a change of scenery is good. You know, we've seen that in other you know, professional situations at the quarterback position. A change of scenery clearly was good for Sam Darnold. A change of scenery was good for Geno Smith when he became a Seattle Seahawk. Right. You know, a change of scenery has been good for Baker Mayfield, most recently there in Tampa. So I don't think Tua can't play football anymore. I think everything just kind of derailed. And also outside of the injuries, you know, that kind of hampered his development, in my opinion, as well, when he missed time because of the concussions.
B-Mac, your former teammate Ben Roethlisberger says what they're trying to do with Drew Allard makes him nervous. He was on a podcast, and I'm just going to read the quote because he's talking about Mike McCarthy's quarterback school, which apparently, you know, he's done for years. But Big Ben was saying, look, it makes me nervous because I'm watching him do three steps. It makes me incredibly nervous. You ask why. You're refining things. That's a difference between refining things and teaching. And he says, when you do football camps, the first thing you're teaching the youngest kids is how to do a three-step drop. He says the whole thing he's seen on video makes him a little nervous. Do you feel nervous about the quarterback room with Pittsburgh?
Outside of Aaron Rodgers, yes, I feel nervous because there's a lot of uncertainties with Will Allen, with Drew Allen, of course. And Mason Rudolph is the most notable vet, but we don't even know if he will be a part of this team once the season starts. You know what I mean? Either via trade or if he doesn't make the cut. I think he will make the cut, but you just don't know. And to piggyback on Big Ben's point, I think, guys, and this is just my personal opinion, and listeners, you can either agree or disagree with me with this one. I think this is a college problem. This is not just a Drew Allen problem. And the reason why I say that is because Drew Allen was in an offense that most quarterbacks are in college football. Everything is predicated on shotgun snaps, right? So because there's mostly shotgun snaps, you don't go through a three-step drop under center. And I don't understand why most college coaches do this, because if your job is to help elevate, number one, win games on the collegiate level, right, but also to help elevate your guys to be at their best so whenever they get opportunity to go to the National Football League, they're more comfortable, why don't you have more under-center exchanges for quarterbacks? And then also, too, another thing that bothers me with college football, there's no verbal snap counts. Everything's a hand clap. Think about the disservice these college coaches are doing for these quarterbacks. Number one, when you get to the NFL, you have to verbalize everything. Number two, if you don't have a verbal snap count, you don't have a chance in drawing someone offsides. Think about how many times in NFL football where you see the quarterback draw someone offsides. You get a free play. That helps extend drives. That helps put you in scoring positions. But because they're clapping like they're in church service in college football, when they get to the NFL, they got to learn how to verbalize play calls and verbalize the snap counts. I think that's just a college quarterback problem, not just a Drew Allen issue. I think it's more consensus with college football.
Right. What was it, Carl? Remember the Hard Knocks? This is going back way back when Jared Goff was a rookie, B-Mac. He didn't even know how to make a huddle. Literally, they went, so he didn't even know how to break call huddle, like break, you know, okay, guys, blah, 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 on two, ready, break.
When he was in L.A.
Yeah, and that was taken all the way back to, you know, Jeff Fisher, Mr. 7-9. But anyway, hey, man, B-Max with us, Brian McFadden, guys, on the Sweet James Accident Attorneys Hotline. We talked yesterday a lot about accuracy. The book on Michael Penix Jr. is that he throws a beautiful deep ball. Remember Cam Newton? Sometimes he could make laser-like throws, but sometimes he would miss the throw in the flat. Is that going to be coachable? Can this regime get Michael to be more accurate? He was 32nd in completion percentage last year.
I think so, because Kevin Stefanski really has a good eye for helping develop quarterbacks. And I think when you talk about Michael Penix, the talent is there. I felt like the last offensive staff did him a disservice. Everything was shotgun related. You never really see him get into those rhythm-like throws. And when he was at Washington, he was at his best when he was in rhythm. Rhythm-like throws, you know, anticipatory throws, throwing guys open before they're actually open, and getting him back to being that guy. So the thing about Penix, man, like I said, and the same thing I said about Tua, it's not like all of a sudden they forgot how to play quarterback, right? Because you know they showed the ability to play quarterback at a high level. Now it's about being consistent. And the thing about great quarterbacks, it's not about the highlight throws and the miraculous plays they make. It's their ability to make routine plays happen routinely. That's what the great ones do. They make the routine plays happen routinely. And for Penix, that's where he needs to get. And I do believe he can get there. And the great thing that I'm seeing from Michael Penix right now, even though there is some limitations on what he can do, guys, he's out there throwing the football, practicing with no knee brace at all.
Yeah.
So seeing that clearly tells me he's ahead of schedule. Because if you watch Pat Mahomes,
even though he's participating, you see that bulky knee brace right. on his knee.
Like an old lineman.
Right? You don't see any, that old line, Dan Marino, Don Joy knee brace, right? But you don't see any of those things attached to Michael Penix's knee. So clearly that's a great sign, and he just got to continue to go through the progression, no setbacks, and be ready to go once training camp starts.
B-Mac, what do you make of, Mike and I played the soundbite yesterday of Kyler Murray talking about, you know, J.J. McCarthy, and then we played J.J. McCarthy, was like, well, there's like two guys in a classroom, and he's sitting on one side, and I'm sitting on the other. It sounds like there's no real mentorship going on. Is that thing going to work, and does it matter if it works? Because Kyler Murray's on a one-year deal, and do we believe in McCarthy? I don't. I haven't since he got drafted.
Well, I can say this much. It's going to work for one guy. It might not work for both.
Yeah.
It's going to work for one, and the one it's going to work for will be the guy who wins the competition. And hearing Kyler, because I saw the same interview, right? Kyler Murray seemed like he welcomed the ability to help J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy made it seem like there has been no dialogue in terms of helping. I'm here, he's there. So now it's all like, okay, there might be a little rift, but who cares? It's competition, right? Because even though it's your job to help each other, it's still your job to outperform the other guy as well. That's what we will see. And to your point, Carl, there's not a lot to believe in J.J. McCarthy right now. And I think if all of us had to put a name in a hat in terms of who we think will win this job, I think all of us would say Kyler Murray.
Speaking of quarterbacks that can move, Lamar Jackson, we kind of chuckle out of him saying, you know, much better communication, much better everything. That's why I'm curious to see what Todd Monken is going to do. It just seems like, you know, that some relationships just get strained and they don't get better, you know, and it seems like Lamar Jackson. I also think there's some pressure on Lamar Jackson, even though it's a first year coach there, to get back into playoffs and win some playoff games, man, because the window is closing for that team.
Man, yes, pressure is there for Lamar Jackson. Yes, it's pressure for the Baltimore Ravens in totality to get back to being a playoff caliber team, because you have an MVP caliber quarterback. And regardless who the head coach is, regardless who the offensive coach is, when Lamar Jackson is healthy, the expectations are extremely high. Period. Mm. Think about the AFC North, right? You have three teams with three new head coaches, and then you have Cincinnati, with Zach Taylor returning, of course, and Joe Burrow. When you look at all of those teams in the division, who has the most pressure? Who has the most expecting pressure? It's Lamar Jackson. What team is the favorite to win the division once again? It's the Baltimore Ravens, right? Mm-hmm. What team in the division is expected to make the most significant playoff run? It's the Baltimore Ravens. And that's solely because of Lamar Jackson. Even though Joe Burrow is a great quarterback as well, no one is expecting Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals to go far or further than Baltimore. So, yeah, the expectations will always be there for Lamar Jackson when he is playing the quarterback position. And I can tell you this much, when he's healthy, he's delivered,
right,
especially, you know, in terms of individual accolades and when it comes to wins. Last year he wasn't healthy, and it played a major part in them not winning games and them firing Coach Harbaugh.
What did you make of the Jackson Dart comments? And then, you know, he addresses his team, for those who don't remember.
But Abdul Carter's not there, right?
He wasn't. He was off, or should I say an excused absence. It was a religious holiday for him, and Harbaugh talked about that. But Jackson Dart addresses the Giants locker room after the Donald Trump political rally controversy. You've been in locker rooms. Is this a big deal or no deal?
In this climate, it's a big deal
for
some. For me, it's no big deal. And the reason why me personally is not a big deal, whatever your political views are, you're entitled to have those views.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're not trying to push those views on me, as long as you're not trying to make those views be a topic of discussion while we're in our place of business, which is the locker room, which is the practice room, which is the meeting room, who cares? Who cares? And now, but this climate is a lot sensitive than what it was years ago, right?
Right.
So now for Jackson Dart, you have to understand where this climate is, especially when you talk about politics. And oftentimes, politics are never associated with sports, but now it's being tied to sports because sports publications are talking about it. So if you're Jackson Dart, you already knew it was going to ruffle some feathers. Clearly you didn't care. But because you play the quarterback position, you should have attacked this before it became a big deal. And for Abdul Carter, if you have an issue with it like he did, don't make it mainstream. Don't make it mainstream.
Just talk to the man one-on-one, right?
Yes. Hit him up on the phone, text and say, bro, I want to holler at you about something, bro. Okay, you support Trump, like, but tell me why. Like, what's going on? But don't put it on Twitter where all of us can see. Because think about it like this, guys, listeners. If Abdul Carter reached out to Jackson Dart, we would have never known about it.
Agreed.
We would have never known that he had a problem with it.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. So he just made a situation bigger than what it should have been. But oftentimes people get caught up in who you like and who you don't like. Man, in the place of business, as long as you do what you're supposed to do and you ain't trying to push that narrative on me, who cares?
I agree. I think what you just said is that's teammates, right? The tolerance of you do whatever you do. I'm going to do my job, but as long as you're not trying to influence me in those ways and you know, we keep it above board. I totally agree with you. And that's why people who got mad at Jackson Dart, I was like, wait a minute. He's got the right to feel however he wants to feel. But the teammate who has an issue with it has to address that the proper way. And that's why I think, Abdul Carter got a lot of smoke from that. Hey, man, great stuff as always, B-Mac. We appreciate you stopping by. It's going to be interesting as we get closer and closer to camp. Make sure you follow him, man, and check him out. He is an analyst for CBS and does all these different things as well. Brian McFadden, two-time Super Bowl champion. Have a great weekend, B.
Thank you for having me.
Great stuff there from Brian McFadden, appearing every week here exclusively on 92.9 The Game. With our boys Dukes and Bell. All right, when we get back to kick off the 9 o'clock hour, Orin and I, we're going to play a game to kick off the 9 o'clock hour. Which position groups for the Atlanta Falcons are solid right now? No controversy, no additions needed. Which positions for the Dirty Birds are set and ready to roll for week one right now? We'll do that to kick off the 9 o'clock hour right here on 92.9 The Game.